Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal. We are rethinking how we build relationships with our customers, and there is no better guest for today's conversation than our guest today. Welcome to the show, Christina.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat.
So let's get right into it. What is your hot take?
We destroyed our writing before AI entered the chat.
Okay, tell me more.
So there's a lot of conversations, especially on LinkedIn, about like AI this, AI that. AI makes you lazy. AI makes you a bad writer. If you have M dashes, you're clearly AI. You didn't really write it. All this other stuff. Here's the thing. Those M dashes come from a place. So someone was using the M dashes for AI to take them. Also, Emily Dickinson is notorious for using a lot of M dashes. So
I love my M dash. I will die on that hill. And I actually do know how to make one. Alt-0150. Okay, people, like, I love my M dash, and now I'm nervous. Everyone's gonna be like, she didn't really write that.
Yeah, but that's the thing. So like, it's learning, so it has to learn from something. So if they're using an M dash, then it had to have been from a writer initially, because it didn't just come from nothing,
right?
But the problem is that we have been optimizing our content for so long that, especially on LinkedIn, and I would say just about every single platform, we've already kind of digitally scrubbed the humanness from our content like years ago. Like, we all know the recipe. We all know the broetry. We're going to all do lines. We're going to have a hook, probably a hook with data, like a data percentage. Then we're going to go into a list. Then we're going to go into a lesson. And then we're going to go into a CTA. So like, we already did the, like, we already kind of botatized our life and our writing before AI ever got here. And so I think that that's also why you're seeing this surge of like meme culture on LinkedIn and people starting to write very, very short form content there, because it is the opposite of the recipe. It is the opposite of the formula. And so that's the hot take. We were messing up before AI did it for us.
I think that there's a lot of that I want to dive into. I just got off a call actually a few minutes ago about like fighting the algorithm. And how, you know, someone writes a post that's actually meaningful and thoughtful and that they sat down and thought was really going to be something that resonated, and maybe it gets a couple hundred views. Mm-hmm. It's in, you know, 200 view jail. But they post that they signed up to volunteer for something and they add it to their volunteer experience to their LinkedIn profile, and all of a sudden thousands of views and like things that isn't really that important. And so not only have we gamified and formalized our writing and made it so that we all sound like, you know, the same bro culture of, hey, I got married this weekend and here's what it taught me about B2B sales.
Yep.
But then we also have to fight against the invisible algorithm that seems to change every week.
Yeah. And then there's also the idea, like, selfie culture has also kind of permeated that too. And so, like, I actually posted a few weeks ago and I was like, I just want to be an average looking person that's really smart and wants to share my ideas. I don't want to have to, like, it's just this whole, like, you have to pose on a couch. I don't know what it is. There's so many selfies on a couch on LinkedIn. I'm like,
I guess to show that you're not a normal, you're a cool kid, not a regular kid. You don't sit at a desk. You sit on a couch.
It's weird. It's just, I don't know. Maybe we all need to just have like a day where we just are not performative, like just a vacation, a holiday, just say what you're going to say. And you
an
don't
anti-performative purge day. Like, don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you have nothing to say, you know what? That's great. Just don't. Just take the day off.
Well, and it's hard to, because like anyone who is working in any kind of, you know, sales role, post-sales role, anyone who has to deal with customers, you feel a little bit like you have to do that in order to get attention. And that's how people are buying these days. And I wrote an article a couple of years ago, like, I don't want to be an influencer.
But you kind of have to.
But if it's the only way my business is going to be successful, then I guess I'm going to have to be an influencer. And I'm coming to terms with it still. It's been like years. And everyone's like, oh, you know, you have to do this in order to get business and get sales. And I wish they were wrong, but they're not.
Yeah. No, I feel the same way. And I have the same trap that I'm kind of like trying to crawl out of. I have a book that I wrote and it's coming out in September. And every time I talk about it, even here, like every time I talk about it, every time I write about it, it feels like I have to put my influencer hat on. And it's like, why can't I just be the little hobbit in the Shire, like surrounded in my garden? And like every now and then, like, Christina isn't an idiot. Like, that's all I actually want. But
I always tell people I'm a secret introvert. Like, I just want to sit in my office and do good shit. Like,
Exactly. But it does feel like, especially with the job market the way that it is, that we all kind of have to be influencers and like do this whole personal brand march. And it's just, I don't know. It's exhausting. And I would say, like, if you're seeing this and you see someone who's killing it on LinkedIn and you're just like sigh, like, oh, I wish I could be like them, I'm going to go ahead and break it to you right now. There is a very good chance that they hate it too. That they're like, get me off this ride, but I have to stay on.
Well, I just had a conversation with someone who was like, oh, yeah, I spend an hour a day crafting a single LinkedIn post because I have to warm the algorithm. So I have to go around and like other people's stuff and comment on other people's stuff. And then I have to write my own thing. And then I have to go around and continue to comment on people's stuff. And it like 10 hours a week of just writing maybe 5 to 6 posts. That seems like a lot.
And then there's also TikTok. Like you have to feel like you have to be creating content there. And so we've turned into this idea of like, you have to know every trend, you have to be on top of it, you have to create the content, you have to do all these things. And we've kind of turned into a world where even if you aren't a marketer, if you just want to be known, you have to be chronically online, and then you have to magically like have it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exhausting. So if you're listening to this, like, we're all exhausted. If you're exhausted, we're exhausted.
Yeah, I've invested in a lot of really good concealer for the bags under my eyes from...
Yeah, same. Like, they're designer, but, like, they're there. Yeah.
They're there. Exactly. Oh, my God, I'm going to steal that. But, let's come to the reality of what you're learning in your book, right? As you're putting that book together, is this something that we, as the quote-unquote influencer group of people, have just created in our heads? Or is there some there? And that this is how we are building relationships in the post-COVID world.
I think it's both. I think it's a bit of a perfect storm. I think you're seeing a few things happening at once. You're seeing the continual commodification of absolutely everything. Your content is not good if it can't be commodified. Your book isn't good if it can't be commodified. Your thoughts, not good if it can't be commodified. And so we're seeing that in everything. We're seeing the further deterioration of third places, which is incredibly harmful, where we get to a point where the third place is now digital. And if it's online, it's probably a conference where we're actually not even paying attention to the speakers. We're actually just going there to see people and hang out. Yeah. Or we're going to the concert and now we're spending like 10x what we would have spent like 10 years ago for the exact same person. And so like you're seeing Coachella turning into something, and South by Southwest, you're seeing all of these like go-to places that are turning into like influencer wonderlands for them, but for everybody else, it's just like, we took your money, but like, you're not going to have a great experience because you're not an influencer. And so
right.
We're seeing all of this commodification to the point where we're lost. And then you factor AI on top of that, where it's saying, well, we've commodified every part about you, but now AI can actually do everything you're doing, whether that's true or not. So now we've commodified you to pieces, and now we can replace you and then commodify that. And then you're kind of left with, okay, well, what's my purpose?
Right. How do I keep my humanity in this experience of digital and AI and performance art, if you will, is a little bit how I feel. And one of the reasons I reached out to you to invite you to be on the podcast was some of your content around the idea that we have to connect emotionally in order to truly build loyalty. And I want you to tell us a little bit more about that. Like, how do we build true customer loyalty, and how do we use emotional connection, especially in this quote unquote world of influencers?
Yeah. So when you look at customer brand relationships, you need to look at it like an actual relationship. You need to look about like love languages and how you show up for each other. The thing is that brands want to be loved, but they're not doing anything worth loving. Like,
they want
not...
it to be a one-way love, right? You love me, but I just kind of tolerate you.
Well, I saw something on, I don't know if it was a thread or a tweet, but it was something that I feel like if you just put this on brands, it's the way I feel. And it was, these can't be the same men that Dolly begged Jolene not to steal. And I was like,
Jolene, you can have them.
Jolene, you can have them. Thanks. Thanks for your service. But I feel the same way about brands. Like, they want us to beg for them. They want us to be okay with spending more. They want us to shout them from the rooftops. They want us to love them and defend them and die on the hill if someone says anything negative. But then they've never shown up for people to warrant that kind of adoration. And so there's a lot of, like, as marketers, and I'm guilty of it too, saying, like, you need to listen to your customers and you need to talk to them. But I'm like, babe, that's the bare minimum. Like, that's not the aspiration. That's how far behind we are. I know there's brands who are like, we do need to do that. And I'm like, where have you been? Like, this is table stakes now. This is not like you're doing the most. And so when you're thinking about the relationships, you need to think about it in terms of micro moments, because brands like to think in, like, extravagance. They're right. going to send you
Super Bowl commercials and sponsorships. Yes. And yeah.
Yeah. So they think, like, I think a great example of this is when you go in and there's a viral post and you see all of these brands in the comments talking to each other. Yep. And every single time I see that, I think, if I had a problem with any of these companies and I hadn't heard from support yet, and I was seeing this, I'd be livid.
Yeah.
It's on par with, like, you fighting with your boyfriend because he can't show up for you. And then you see him on a fishing trip, like, doing the most. And you're like, so you do have time.
Right.
Just not for me. And that's what these brands are showing people. Like, oh, we have time to be goofy and cute in the comment section. We don't have time to post on your TikTok where you're having a real issue. And that's how people feel. Like, they want connection, but then they aren't willing to do the things that a healthy connection needs to have. And so whether it be love language or anything like that, it's not doing what it needs to do. And they want us to feel something, but they're not doing anything to make us feel that way. And I find that, like, depending on who it is you're trying to build that relationship with, it honestly very rarely does it take a lot.
Just the bare minimum of basic human consideration.
Yeah, like, I see you.
Yeah.
Or, like, there's so many brands that I'm like, I don't know why you don't repost other people's content that talks about you. Like, just a retweet or a repost, I think, is huge.
Right.
Because it basically amplifies positive word of mouth. It shows that you saw it and that you appreciated it. And then chances are that person's then going to tell every single person they know or see that day, like, so-and-so just reposted me. And it took, what, 2 seconds?
Right.
It took 1 or 2
seconds. But how much of that is not happening because of, like, the internal bureaucracy that we've created of, like, well, I need approval to, you
100%.
Know, I worked with a brand that had, like, a 10-step approval process to send an internal email to 25
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're creating this situation in which we have to dehumanize because we've created so much bureaucracy. And by dehumanizing, we no longer serve our customers who are humans.
100%. And so one of the things that I talk about in the book is we have a massive problem with de-siloing. And so as companies grow, there's a reason why the bigger a company gets, the more away from you as a consumer it feels, the harder it is to get in touch with them. And it's because of that. It's that bureaucracy. It's that siloing effect. And so we need to de-silo it because the customer experience, most brands, they haven't sit with customer support. And it's owned by them. And if the customer leaves, it's their fault. It's their metric to own and be burned by.
Right.
But
even if it's not their, like, doing, you know what I mean? It's like getting in trouble for something you didn't even do.
I'd argue most of the time it has nothing to do with them. So, great case in point. Let's say that someone sees you online, sees a social post, thinks you're hilarious. So, like, win for the social team. Because of that, they want to learn more. So now they're getting deeper into the flywheel or the funnel, depending on what your drug of choice is. And then they talk to sales. And sales has a very different vibe.
Right.
A bit more buttoned up, maybe a bit too serious. Everything's good to go. They're a bit pushy. Maybe they promise you things that the tool can't actually do. Then you get through and now you're frustrated because it literally can't do what you asked for it to do. So you were lied to. And then basically everyone else, whether it be support, who's trying to fix something that isn't broken, it's just not there. And then you have customer advocacy that maybe wants to do something with you because maybe you have a follower count or you're an influencer, but they can't really fix what's broken because, like I said, it's not really broken. It's just not there. That one salesperson undid the work of everyone else you touched.
Right.
And it not just sales, marketing, anything. It exists everywhere. And there's people on your team that are not customer facing, that their work still touches the customer and still impacts customer experience, but they'll never know because everybody is siloed. And so you have to de-silo first. You have to figure out, like, how can we work? How can we break up the bureaucracy? How can we be more human? So it isn't a, I filled out the form and I need to wait 7 business days. And then maybe the director will say it's okay. And then, like, why?
Right.
Like, why are you not empowering your team? And I just find that, like, because we're so risk averse, we've kind of like just mechanically created this infrastructure that dehumanizes all of us, including our staff, including our clients, whatever that is.
Right. Well, and that goes kind of back to your hot take a little bit, right? We've de-riskified all of our professional content because, hey, this is a formula and it works and just follow the formula and don't deviate from the formula because someone might not like the way you wrote it the first time.
Exactly. And the thing, too, is that once you have that formula and you're not doing anything outside of that, then nothing is a surprise and delight. Nothing feels special because right. You're like, how have you felt the first time you saw something and it was personalized for you? And you're like, oh, this is really cool. This feels like it's made for me. And then weeks go by and something similar happens and you're like, oh.
That was a form letter.
That was a form letter.
Yeah.
You went from feeling very special to I am just a number real fast, very fast.
And the extra layer of, and I got, right? Like I got duped a little bit. Like I was dumb enough to fall for it, right?
That's I thought they liked me.
I thought they liked me. Well, could we imagine, I always joke with people, like you need to think about how would you show up if you were dating this person? Because if you showed up as a company and you walked in, I always joke with salespeople, if you go to the bar and you stand in the middle and you jump up on the bar and you say, hey, ladies, my name is Mike, and here's my pedigree, here's all my stats, here's everything about me. Don't you want some of this?
Yes.
Every woman in the bar would be like,
pass, miss me with that.
Right. Yeah. But instead, we do that. We do on LinkedIn, and we do that in our marketing, and we stand there, and we point at the guy next to us and say, you don't want him, you want me, because I'm way better, instead of developing a real relationship. But then imagine if that same person you're dating had multiple personalities and you met someone at the bar who you really liked, but then at dinner you were like, whoa, this guy's crazy.
Yes.
This family, he was wonderful. Like, we see this in people and we throw up the red flags and yet we let companies get away with it.
100%. And also the thing that they do too, like, I love that analogy because it makes so much sense. Like, your social is your Tinder profile. It's the public advertisement of, like, don't you want to spend time with this? I'm the absolute best.
Right. But then here's all the cool things I'm doing. Don't you want to come along for a hike on the Grand Canyon with me?
Exactly. But then on top of that, imagine that same person, you connect with them and you're like, great. And then you realize that they're using the exact same pickup line on you and one else.
Yeah.
They have a script.
Yeah. And that's one thing if they're honest about it, right? Like if that's their script and they're open, like, hey, this is my script. This is my play. This is what
this
I do.
This is my vibe. Yeah.
Right. But if we pretended like, hey, Christina, this was just for you. Just you. You're the only one for me, babe. Like, that's when it starts to feel icky, when it doesn't feel like I was a part of that. Like I was on the inside of that. I was an insider knowledge person in the first place. If I have to find that out after the fact, that's when it starts to get icky.
Oh, 100%. And then it also, you will never trust them again.
Right.
And then you'll also not have trust in a lot of other people. So it's kind of like there's certain like industry verticals where you kind of have that negative connotation because you've been burned one too many times by people in that thing. So it's like the finance bro of it all. Like, you're like, oh, I know, I've played this game.
Yeah, I
know
exactly. I see a Patagonia vest. I know what's coming.
Yeah, I know it's coming. I can write this playbook. I've seen your playbook. I've seen it happen. Yeah, it's the exact same thing. And so I think if you think about it in terms of I want a human relationship and I want human behaviors, then I need to treat them like a human. And what would that look like? And actually think about, like, what are their love languages? What motivates them? What makes them feel seen and heard? What makes them feel psychologically safe? Like, all of those things, it's all built around that. It's all built around how you show up, how you tell your story. How do you motivate them? How do you make it very clear, like, I'm creating this specific kind of path for you? And so a lot of what I talk about earlier on in the book is game theory, because that plays such a in psychological behavioral psychology, because it plays such a huge role in, like, if a brand's listening to this and be like, Christina, that's really great, but we have like 2 million customers. We can't personalize it.
Right. Because that was going to be the next question of, like, how do we be human at scale?
Yeah. It's game theory.
So tell us more, like, if someone wants to get started, and they want to take that first step on that journey, what is the number one thing they should do first?
They need to go ahead and understand that if they have a very clean customer journey map, it's wrong.
I had an accounting professor once who said, the more time you spend on your forecast, the more wrong it is, or something like that. That's very much that same thing. If you spend all of your time building the forecast instead of actually out there doing the work, then you're going to be disappointed with your forecast.
Exactly. But think about it this way. Like, you'll do a customer journey map and it's clean. And like, all right, they do this one and then they do this one and then they do this one and then they do this one. And my response is always like, you might get 1% do that. And that's like lucky. That's like good.
Yeah.
Because it's not messy. And as humans, whether you want to treat us like humans or not, we are messy.
Yeah.
We are messy. We doubt ourselves. We overthink. We have bureaucracy.
We behave inconsistently. We have a lot of cognitive dissonance going on for sure.
Yeah. There are variables that are going to impact our decision that have absolutely nothing to do with you. Why did you want an email back? I'm going to a Taylor Swift concert tonight. Like, has nothing to do with your business. Totally going to impact your business. You're not going to get that contract signed tonight, buddy. Like, just things like that where it's just like we're trying to put people in a box, or we're trying to like shove them into a spreadsheet as a number, and then think that we can predict what they can do. And it's like, you're literally acting like this is a vacuum. There is no vacuum. There isn't one.
Like, well, and anyone who pretends like they have the magic solution to a one-size-fits-all approach, right? So like we did a study a couple of years ago, and my background is in customer research, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how people make decisions.
Yeah.
And we called it our beer test, right? It's like the Bush, would you have a beer with them? We did the same thing, but for brands, and discovered that people make decisions illogically and emotionally based on whether or not they would quote unquote have a beer with that brand. And it has absolutely nothing to do with the value that they're getting and all of those things. And that does come into play for renewal. Like, let's not pretend that it doesn't.
Yeah.
But we rationalize logical decisions. Or we rationalize emotional decisions with logic is what we discovered. Mm-hmm. People will go back and look for any reason to say, no, I made a rational, logical decision based on fact.
Yeah.
You probably made an emotional decision and you're just backtracking to make it a logical one.
100%. And so if you couple that information with behavioral psychology, with game theory, you'll see that people do that same time. So like, let's say that someone wants a beer with your brand, but they're actually talking to a competitor.
Yeah.
They're going to look for confirmation bias. They're going to look for the bad reviews for that brand because they're like, oh, something inside me doesn't feel right. And then they're going to find reviews and be like, see, that person didn't have a good time.
There was a 1-star review a couple of years ago.
And yeah, so exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That just confirms like my worries are validated. Yeah. We're not going to go there. We're going to go over here. They make me feel warm and fuzzy.
My gut says to go with them.
Yes.
So I have to go find the data to support that feeling.
Exactly. Exactly. And so when you start realizing how people are doing that and how they're looking, it's kind of the same idea of the person who'll go on TikTok and be like, I did my research, and be like, babe, you watched one 30-minute YouTube video.
If even that. You like, skipped on 2x speed.
You didn't. That YouTube doctoral like thesis paper is not coming, babe. Like, it's not coming. But it's the same thing. They basically watched a video that validated their thoughts and like, see?
And watched a video that validated their thoughts that was served to them on the algorithm that is tuned to what they like and what they already believe.
Exactly. And so what you're seeing is, and I think we see this now with like misinformation and distrust, is people are saying like, I trust this news outlet. So it doesn't matter what they say. I'm not going to question it. Because of course, why would they lie to me? Like, oh, there's a whole laundry list there. But like, you want to trust them. So you're going to trust them.
Exactly.
But that's the thing, is like, build that customer journey map. But like, be as messy as humanly possible. Like, be very messy and talk to your customers about like, where are they going off? Like, where are they kind of like meandering? And you're like, you lost them for 3 months. Okay, cool. When they circle back, so glad that we're talking again. Like, just wanted to know, like, during our break in communication, like, were you searching for other things? Were you busy? Was there maybe like financial changes?
Right.
Like, and that conversation, if you build that relationship, that conversation makes sense to them. If you don't have a relationship with them and you start asking those questions, be like, ooh, that's really intrusive. Like, that's
very transactional.
That's really none of your business. But that's the thing, is like, there are things that you need that relationship with so you can be mutually beneficial. But the way brands want relationships, it's one-sided. They want you to love them. They want you to do all this for them. And then, like, best case scenario, you get a hoodie or like a Yeti. But that's like top tier. That's like a ring on your finger.
I was gonna say, that's a very expensive gift to.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that it's too bad too, because there are some brands that do it really, really well.
Yeah.
And then there are some brands that ruin it for everybody, right? Like, we have one brand that makes everybody suspicious, and now I'm suspicious of even the good ones.
Yes. I completely agree. Like, I love Chewy.
I love Chewy.
I think Chewy is like, if anyone ever asks, like, all right, Christina, you dog on everybody, no one's getting it right. Who's getting it right? It's Chewy. And I say that knowing that a lot of the good stuff they do is a repeatable, scalable thing. But the way they execute it makes it feel like it's not scalable. It makes it feel intimate. And so I really love how they show up, how they show up with empathy, how you'll see anyone that works for the company talking about it. And they're using the same kind of vernacular. They're using the same kind of talking points about emotion and empathy. And I think that's just really beautiful. So if I'm not dogging on everybody, Chewy's safe.
Chewy is safe.
Chewy is
safe.
It
almost feels like they have a customer journey guideline rather than a map, right?
Yes.
We're generally in this direction. We exist in this quadrant of decision making, but not drawing an actual map that you have to stick to rigidly or a decision
exactly.
tree.
Exactly. And I think that they've also set up processes where everyone feels empowered. So you don't have to be like, I really want to do something for these people and get everything up there. Like I wrote earlier today about, when was the last time you fought for a customer? Because we talk about talking to a customer, but what about like you fought for them?
You're advocating. You're in the trenches for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Because when was the last time you did that? Because I don't think a lot of people have. There's some customer marketers I've worked with. I know that they've like had knockout, drag out fights. I've had knockout, drag out fights. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like we're not doing right by them. And we can't ask them to advocate for us if we're going to treat them like this. And so, like, how are you showing up? What does that look like? How messy is it? And I think that's the other thing, too, is, like, we have all these silos and we have all this bureaucracy and we have all this infrastructure to make it not be messy. But in the result of removing the mess, we've removed what made us human. We removed the humanness that made people feel connected to us.
Yeah. And I think that is something that we have to consciously decide to take back.
Yes. And I think we're going to. I think you're going to see not everybody, but I think that right now we're really facing, like with everything that's happening on social, with mistrust, with AI, we're seeing this big push, whether we like it or not, to kind of go all in on like automating absolutely every facet of our lives. And I think, and I'm starting to see pushback, and I think it's only going to spread. I think you're going to see a human renaissance where people are going to see all the damage that it's doing. And they'll be like, we got to rally. We can't do this. So I think we're going to suffer first. And then I think we're going to course correct.
We're going to have a little bit of a customer dark ages here, and then we'll get our renaissance.
I think so. Yeah.
So considering that, thinking about all of the incredible people that you follow, that you listen to, that you know, or aspire to know, who is leading the charge? Who is going to be the leader of that renaissance?
I think it's Eli Weiss. He's at Yotpo. He's absolutely brilliant. He's their head of retention. I think he's VP of retention, I think is his title. But he is brilliant. And he continues to show positive examples of what this looks like in practice. And so I think he's also shifted a lot of how Yotpo does their work and really kind of like digging back into the community and what does this look like and what does retention look like from an e-commerce perspective? He's done a really great, thoughtful job, and he's very holistic. He's every time he posts something, it feels very human. And so it's got to be Eli.
Okay. Well, we will definitely be checking out Eli's content and making sure that we're following him. But if someone is really connecting with you, where can they find you online?
So I live on Twitter. I'm not going to call it X. I live on LinkedIn.
I refuse. It's Twitter.
Well, if Max can go back to HBO Max, then X can go back to Twitter. So I'm holding out hope. But I live on Twitter. I live on LinkedIn. I have my book coming out called Transforming Customer Brand Relationships in September. You can find that at Waterstones, Barnes & Noble, Amazon and Kogan page and pre-order it now. Can you just search my name basically and book and it'll come up.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me on the Growth Signal. This was a really fascinating conversation.
Thanks for having me. I love chatting with you.